I hope you are all as stimulated as I am by this conference. And it struck me as I thought, as I was sitting in a really interesting session this morning, that our mission, that we are a membership organization whose trade is discourse on ideas about arts philanthropy within a diverse community of grant makers, we should add to that the stimulating quality, because I think the level of exchange that's going on here and continues to go on in GIA is a hallmark of this institution and something that we really should value. The other thing that occurred to me as I look around the room and go to these sessions is that 3 years ago, after the field inquiry, we did a survey of our members, and our average member was 47 years old, was white, and was female. I have a sense that if we did the survey again, we would probably still be white as an average and female, but we would be younger. And I think I say this in all seriousness because I'm very pleased to see a number of new young members here at the conference. And it means that we're doing something that we've talked a lot about, which is making that transition from an older generation, such as the one I represent, to a younger generation who find these meetings as interesting and stimulating as we do. And we're, I hope, passing the torch for the organization that those of us have been around for a while so value. Having said that, I will start the annual meeting, and we will hear from our various board members about the major facets of the organization, and I promise you this is restricted to 30 minutes, but I think the reports are important for you to understand since you are active participants in the organization. So we'll begin with Sue Colleton, who is our treasurer, who will report to you on the budget for the year and our fundraising reports. And this is the fundraising report, I hope you know, is a particularly important one because this organization is supported entirely by its membership. It is the membership or the members who give to the organization beyond the membership fee who supply 75% of our revenues. So the fundraising report is an important one, and I hope you'll find it as entertaining as I do. Sue.
Well, I don't know how entertaining I'm going to be, but on your chairs, you're going to find a copy of our balance statement, our balance sheet, and our income statement. If you take a look briefly, we're in a pretty strong cash position on the balance sheet. We've got over $500,000 in assets, most of them cash. We've got about $50,000 in liabilities. There's certainly we've got enough cash to cover our liabilities, and we're also maintaining a healthy cash reserve to cover our cash flow needs and to respond to any programmatic opportunities, which is something that we did this year in our approved budget. In the income statement, if you take a look at the second column, the projection for 2005, we're expecting to end the year in actually a stronger position than we had originally budgeted for this year. That is due to some cash savings that we've had regarding our publications. A few of those came in under budget. And also because of the increased revenues related to this conference. The local committee did a terrific job of raising sponsorships and support for this conference. Thank you very much. And it's made a difference in our cash statement. I'd like you to take a look at the top line item, the core contributions. We had a goal this year of $400,000. We're projecting now about $381,000, so we're coming in a little bit under our goal. If you have any pending proposals from GIA on your desk, I do ask you to take a look and encourage you to give it serious consideration so we can close the year on budget for that line item. Julie and I are here. We'd be happy to take any questions if you have specific questions about the income statement later in the day. And that's it for the treasurer. Thanks. And now we have a members report from membership from Kathy Freshley.
So I also have excellent news to report. Our membership is growing. not only in numbers, but in the size and type of member that is participating. Today, we have 353 organizational members, 68% that are local, regional, or state funders, 8% are international funders, and 18% are in the public sector. We're very delighted that we have a much broader diversity than when we first started. And this is such a major change because when we began 20 years ago, this organization was started by national funders who saw a need for a national dialogue, and they certainly have developed. This organization has grown exponentially. The diversity of our membership is reflected in this conference. We have a record number of paid attendance, 325. 490 people are here if we include the speakers. We used several things this year to help to draw people to this conference. We had a half price off membership dues if you came to the conference and joined the organization at the same time. It was a very effective method. And the Irvine Foundation underwrote the attendance at the conference for 12 of the community foundations in their area, which was a very smart move. Thank you. We are always looking at how we can grow our membership. If you look at the financials, you'll see that our membership dues is not a large amount, but as Sarah was saying, 75% of our income comes from leadership gifts more than membership. But we want to grow our membership also. We want to increase that breadth. And so I think if you enjoyed this conference, if you learned something from this conference, you should take back to your local communities kind of a charge. What are the people and the foundations in your community that you think would also benefit from this conference? There are things that you can do to encourage their attendance. You could follow the Irvine example and next year bring colleagues to this conference. You could take advantage. Everyone has the ability to designate 12 people or 12 organizations to receive the reader. It's part of a benefit of your membership. And so if there are people in your community that you think would really benefit from being a member, ask them, put their names down and designate them so they'll receive the reader. They won't get all the other benefits, but they'll receive the reader and they will be seduced by the power of that publication. And the third is that you can, in your communities, we're going to continue this half price deal so that if you start to talk about GIA in your communities, bring to their attention that they could come to this conference half price if they joined at the same time. So thank you very much. And I think the one thing that we have to say that I've been ordered to talk about is that we are being asked to celebrate our 20th anniversary this year. There's a scroll, but it doesn't look like a scroll. It looks like a beautiful mural right across from the registration desk, and it's where we're writing our personal memories. What was a great experience? Something that happened to you and something that's meaningful to you about being a member in GIA. This mural scroll looks so beautiful that because we had an artist engaged in it, and it's a gorgeous mural, but no one wants to write and put things up on it. And so we're urging you just to put your comments, put your thoughts, and put your energies up on that, and also to sign up to have a video of all your memories. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Lisa Kremen, and I am here to give the nominating committee report for the board. I want to talk about the nominations process a little bit and to remind you and ask you to really think about who you would like to nominate in the future. Nominations can be accepted year-round. You can self-nominate, and all the nominations are considered very seriously. They are accepted through, as they were this year, late June, June 24th. And the voting on the nominations comes from the primary member from the organization. So some of you, if you're thinking to yourself, gosh, I didn't actually see that ballot, it's because you're not the primary contact for your organization, and you could talk to that primary contact about it. The process is very thorough and very thoughtful and very focused on a variety of different diversity characteristics that include interest and participation in GIA activities, ethnic and racial diversity, gender, age, arts grant-making budget, the size of the budget, the organizational grant-maker type, that corporate, community, private, regional, public, etc., the position within the organization that the individual holds, and the region of the country that that individual is from. There are two areas where we have no diversity. One is how hard all board members have to work and do work. And the other, and actually this is sort of a new characteristic that was brought up at a board meeting about a year ago, is that I think you'd be interested to know that the board actually now 100% of the board makes personal contributions to the organization. I think we looked at each other at one moment in time. And I'll actually give credit where it's due to Ben Cameron for the recommendation, which was, A, this is what good nonprofit organizations do. B, we all feel that it's we get a tremendous amount personally out of our engagement with GIA, and that was the right thing to do. So our personal gifts also make up a piece of the budget. So I'm now going to talk about the board members that we are sadly saying goodbye to from their service on the board and to thank them, and then I'm going to announce our new board members. First of all, since 1998, Jeannie Butler has served on the Grantmakers in the Arts Board, and I'm going to ask you to hold your applause to the end. I'm going to talk about six individuals. Jeannie served on the board as vice president for 3 years. She was chair of the nominating committee for a term. And I think that one of the very important things Jeannie did during her tenure was she was an early adapter and encourager of public members being a part of GIA. And so, and there's some other board members that have taken that forward, but I think that that was a huge contribution. And finally, no less than that was the fact that she was the co-chair of the 2002 conference in Charlotte. Sarah Solitaroff, our fearless leader, who is our chair and president, and during her term saw public agencies become full members of GIA, which is a very significant institutional shift for this organization. Both Sarah and Jean stayed on an extra year, so they served 3 years in their leadership positions, and which is particularly significant if you're the chair, to see this group through finishing the strategic plan and beginning to implement it. And with Jeannie, Sarah motivated Grantmakers in the Arts to an advanced place in thinking about arts education and the forming of the Arts Education Working Group, which we're seeing really take shape right now, and I think it's very exciting and very important. Kathy Freshley As you saw just a moment ago, was chaired the membership committee of GIA. She served as the liaison to the Council on Foundations for us in Washington, which was extremely important, and played some pivotal roles, which I don't know that we all know exactly what they comprised of, but were influential in enhancing and strengthening our lines of communication and our relationship with the Council on Foundations, particularly over the past year. Ed Jones has served on the board since 1999. He, as in the early adopter category, he was the first chair of the web committee and bravely took this on when no one else would. And because he knew it was very important, but he just wasn't sure what it meant, but took it on at a time when it needed to be advanced, and that was very important. He has been a very good corporate member of the board, which and corporate members are not as plentiful as we would like them to be. He was a secretary of the board for a term, and I think it's safe to call him the chair of this 20th anniversary effort, and including the wonderful mural on the wall outside that Kathy was referring to. Shelley Cohn. Shelley, are you here? For those of you there at the opening party, we tried to toast her, but she did an uncharacteristic early departure to that event, so it was a little embarrassing to all of us. Okay, so Shelley was really the first member of the GIA board representing a state arts agency, and that was quite significant. I think all of you in the public sector would have been extremely proud to see how she represented your interests at a board level and advanced this idea of having public members be full-scale members of GIA. She's highly respected for all of her work, both in her state as well as within this organization, and served as a term of secretary of the board. She's leaving the GIA board before a full term because she is leaving her role as after 21 years of being the director of the Arizona Commission for the Arts to go on to a new chapter of her life. So we wish you the best. And finally, also not rotating off because of board terms, but I guess I would say life terms, Rebecca Lowry, who served on the GIA board since 2002, became a mother recently and has decided to make a personal change in her life and is stepping down from the world of grant-making and also from the GIA board. Her contributions were significant, most importantly related to the development of the Indigenous Resource Network. She really helped shape it and very quietly and generously advanced the presence of the conversation at our governing level. And I think she would be rewarded if she were here because she would see that the leadership has been picked up by a variety of interested parties that have been supporting it all along, and it is being now co-chaired in the future by Vicki Benson and Lori Poirier. So, will those of you that are here stand up? Jeannie, Ed, Kathy, Sarah, Vicki, where else? Where everybody else? And now I get to announce our new board members. And I am not going to talk about them at length because you will get full bios in your membership bulletin next week. And I would also like to ask them to stand if they are here. And they are Alan Cooper, who is the Executive Director of the Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation. Alan, if you can stand and stay standing. Did he have to leave?
He had to leave,
okay. Helen Howarth, who is a Program Officer for Arts and Culture at the Rasmussen Foundation in Anchorage, Alaska. Anne McQueen, Program Officer of the Boston Foundation and host of next year's.
Oops.
I'm sorry. Anne McQueen from the Boston Foundation, okay. And the postcard gave it away. And Janet Rodriguez, who is the Vice President of Cultural and Philanthropic Programs at J.P. Morgan Chase in New York. Thank you, everybody. And welcome.
Hello, I'm Vicki Benson, and it has been my pleasure this year to take from Ed Jones, or actually he gladly passed it to me, the chair of the e-communication committee. And we're pleased today to announce that on November 1st, GIA's new website will be launched. Yes. The planning committee for this website included Ed and his longtime research on websites and what GIA wants and needs, Hal Cannon, Nancy Fushin, Rick Hernandez, Sarah Solitaroff, and a great staff of Katie Kurtz, who has left us, but taken over by Tomer Peterson and Ann Folk. Now, the website has been developed in conjunction with GIA's overall plan to provide information about GIA to potential new members and the general public, and more importantly, serve as a resource of information for GIA members and others involved in arts philanthropy. So when you have a chance to look after November 1st, you will see updated information about GIA and its programs. There will be a searchable library of most of the reader information. This will be ongoing, however. We're continuing to load the prior material. There are, at this point, about 600 files and articles, reviews, reports, and publications that are uploaded in the library that you'll be able to look at, refer to others. And the top page of the new site will also feature a news update, providing links to the newest news that has importance to all of our work. The members-only part will include membership directory, and you'll be able to do a full search of the membership directory. So it's very exciting to us. I'm sure it's very exciting to Ed. I think I know that for a fact. And so at about the end of this month, you'll receive an email with your password and your new login. So look for that. In an effort to broaden its service to its membership, GIA has also begun assembling working groups around shared concerns, allowing members to further a mutual interest. The first created, which has been gathering as long as GIA has been in existence, or longer, I think, is the Individual Artist Funders Group. This group organizes a pre-conference each year and is now working in a more formal way to disseminate resources that these longtime funders of individual artists have gathered. I refer you to the lead article in the current reader by Cynthia Gehrig of Jerome Foundation titled Supporting Individual Artists, a Toolbox. And by the way, Cindy is a founding member of GIA. For your information. The Arts Education Working Group has been developed to bring focus to the ever-present and hugely broad issue of arts education funding, a field that suffers from chronic fragmentation. The committee's milestone is research on arts education grant making, 1999 to 2003. The committee is setting short-term goals rather than long-term vision. And its first goal is to develop an arts education matrix, which will actually be discussed tomorrow at an 8:30 meeting in the morning, led by Jonathan Katz, Sarah Solitaroff, Jeannie Butler. So check your schedule for further information on that important meeting on the Arts Education Matrix. And lastly, you've heard some of the Indigenous Resource Network, which was organized in 2004 to increase cultural competency and awareness within philanthropy regarding Indigenous models of giving, values, arts, and expressive culture. It aims to strengthen the role of Native voices in GIA's programs and elsewhere. The network is co-chaired by myself and Lori Poirier, director of the First Peoples Fund. The network, devised of Native and non-Native grantmakers, created sessions for this conference. Network member Tia Oros-Peters, Zuni Pueblo, wrote the essay, "Every Dress Has Its Own Song," in the previous reader. And Lori Poirier, Oglala Lakota, and Elizabeth Woody, Navajo, Warm Springs, Wasco, and Yakima, wrote Voices of a Collective Spirit for the current reader. From the work of the Indigenous Resource Network, you soon will hear a plethora of Indian voices included in all issues and topics. And let me restate that. You will soon hear a plethora of Indian voices on all issues and topics. Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki, Lisa, Kathy, and Sue. And I'd like to ask Anne McQueen, Claire Shaw, Rebecca Blunt to come to the podium to talk to you about next year's conference, which is still kind of a secret.
That's where you're going.
Good afternoon. I finally discovered something more terrifying than speaking to 300 people, and that's planning a fabulous conference for 300 people. Especially after this one, Angie and Claire, this has been really quite fabulous, continues to be quite fabulous. last night, as I contemplated the improbability of the sounds of P-Funk at the Boston Symphony, I said, no. We're doing something completely different. Our conference theme, Beantown Remix, is meant to speak to looking at Boston in a different way, in a new way, in turning old biases and preconceptions upside down. And we want to do this for you, but frankly, we also want to do this for ourselves. We want to be discovering new things about our hometown and showing them off a little bit, integrating them into the national conversation, and we really quite look forward to it. Let me ask Claire to talk to you a little bit about the pre-conferences.
Okay. Thank you. The pre-conferences in this session were really outstanding, so you've set a high standard. We hope to live up to it. As you can see on your card, and by the way, if this is your impression of Boston, we've got a treat for you, because this isn't it. I'm second generation. There's a lot more going on than this. And the pre-conferences are going to be Newport, Rhode Island, which is going to be themed on historic preservation. You're going to have dinner in one of the cottages there. And Benawaldi's been very helpful in that. In North Adams, we're going to be doing research as a theme, working in conjunction with Williams College, looking at community impact. In Portland, Maine, NEFA and many of our colleagues around the country who have been working on the creative economy are really going to have an opportunity to dig in deep on that theme. And finally, in Provincetown, Mass, we're going to be working with many of the LINC projects around the country and also others who are interested in individual artists. And we've got the great collaboration with the Fine Arts Work Center there. So it's going to be exciting, and we really hope you come.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I stand up here in solidarity with my pre-conference planning
sisters. And I do want to say that on our larger committee, there are some members with longer hair. So, so and in contrast to Los Angeles, where remember the map we got at the very beginning when we arrived that showed how Los Angeles could sort of eat 8 other American cities. Boston is a very walkable city, and we will welcome you to it with wide arms. And it's also filled with history. And I should say that it's Boston, Massachusetts. Massachusetts was named for Chief Massasoit, who was the leader of the Wampanoag people. And our hotel for the conference will be the Omni Parker House, which in and of itself is filled with history. It's the it's reportedly the longest continuously operating hotel in America. It one time played host to monthly dinner meetings with people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and it was also politically where John F. Kennedy made the announcement of his candidacies for public office. So we'll be in a really special building for most of our meetings. And there's also culinary history there for the few of you in the room who care about food. For example, the Parker House roll was invented there, and also the Boston cream pie. And at one point, a man named Malcolm Little was a waiter who was later known as Malcolm X. And Ho Chi Minh was a baker there at the Omni Parker House. So I think you get the idea. And also, the Omni Parker House is right on Boston's Freedom Trail, and we're very near the Boston Common, America's oldest public park. So, and since the work of our field is about feelings and aesthetics, you might want to pay a reflective visit to a marble monument in the Boston Public Gardens that is actually a monument to the invention of ether, or anesthetics. So, okay, I won't go on. So, but again, we'll welcome you to Boston and New England. I look very much forward to working with all of you to pull off another really great conference. Thank you.
We are going to be continuing, expanding, broadening, and deepening the conversations we're having here today. But we really want to make this is for you. We want to hear from you what you want to see, what you want to talk about, what you want to listen to, what you want to eat. Keep us informed. And to that end, I want to introduce you to the other people of the Boston contingent and our host committee. And if we could briefly stand so people recognize you. Lida Kuth, Amy Ellsworth, Chong Hong, Sam Miller, Jane Preston, I think, has left. Judy Lee Reed. Please feel free to grab any of us in the hallway, email us, call us. We truly want to hear from you and welcome your volunteer efforts on behalf of this conference. Thank you.
So the arts keep rolling. I hope you appreciate our geographical spread with these conferences. I know it's hard on some of your travel budgets, but we try to give you a good perspective on the country. We've been in Seattle and in Cleveland and Los Angeles and Boston, and if you look back, we've been far and wide. So ends our annual meeting for 2005. I think you find the organization not only a stimulating one, but it's financially viable, and that's no small task. I'd like to introduce Joe Smoke, who is with the Los Angeles Department of Cultural Affairs and a member of the host committee here in Los Angeles, and he will introduce this afternoon's speaker.